trumpeter Lee Morgan brings in other jazz greats like Herbie Hancock, Billy Higgins, Jackie McLean, Hank Mobley, and Larry Ridley on this classic written by him, which he released in 1967, although he composed it in 1965. It became the title track for the 1967 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and this is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. If it gets any crazier, we'll all have to pool our money together and see if we can get out of here. In any event, I think we have to pool our money together to see if we can get out of here anyway, the way things are going. Well, we're going to start something today which will be a recurring feature. It's an occasional feature, and it would be about how attitudes are changing with respect to this election. And there's a reason for doing it that way. We have lots and lots of experts all over the place, and they're telling us lots and lots of things. And that's good. It's good to have information. But I always prefer, not that I don't want to listen to the experts. I think the experts have a lot to say, a lot to contribute. But I like the idea of being very close to what the people are thinking. What are people thinking? So today, actually, this week, we begin the journey 1 year to the 2020 election. And we would want to know what people are thinking now and along the way. What are they thinking? So the buildup is occurring. And we'll come back to this topic of what people are thinking as the countdown takes place to the 2020 presidential election. So far, we're getting quite a few clues as to how it's going. And we'll pick up on those clues and follow them to the end. How will this end? Is really the question. How will all of this end? We see what is happening. We're getting a lot of information from a lot of different places. But that is not as exciting as when you talk to people and you find out from them themselves what they're thinking. Why they're thinking, what they're thinking. And especially with this election cycle, it is a most extraordinary event. In so many ways, there's some crazy things happening. And you can report on it, and I'm glad that many news organizations are reporting different aspects of it. But in the end, nothing is as scintillating. Nothing is as original as the people telling you what they're thinking themselves. There's no right or wrong, it's just what they're thinking. And if you can put your finger on the pulse of what they're thinking and why they're thinking what they're thinking, that's far more important than, you know, just reading a story from one reporter's point of view with quotes from experts. There are many, many experts. But this is an unusual year. And I don't think the experts would have any deeper thoughts than ordinary people. Because they're feeling it and they're reading it at a visceral level. So we should ask them, what are they thinking? So we'll start that journey today, considering this is the 1 year mark to the end of the election cycle in 2020. So, what are people thinking? That's what fascinates me. And most often, we don't take the time to listen. We're not interested in what people are thinking. Yeah, we're interested in what the so-called experts are thinking, but I've been around long enough to know that, and I'm not knocking experts, we need them. They have something special to offer us. But to me, journalism becomes real when you talk to regular people, ordinary people. In their own ways, they are excellent barometers for measuring how we are doing. They open up windows for us to peek through, and we should pay attention. Has nothing to do with whether you're right or wrong, whether you have a degree in political science, whether you have been elected to office or not. These things don't really matter in the scheme of things. Because in the end, the experts are depending on you too. The experts are depending on the people to give them a more accurate reading of what is going on in all of these fields. They want to know what's going on. And you can't really tell that by just doing studies and you run polls and yes, they give you information. I'm not knocking it. They give you information. But to me, the most telling information you can get is right from the source. What are people thinking? And why are they thinking what they're thinking? What will they do about what they're thinking? This is to me, the highest form of journalism. And that's why on this program, I like to ask you that question or those questions. What are you thinking? Why are you thinking what you're thinking? What are you doing with what you're thinking? What are you doing about what you're thinking? So we'll start that occasional series today. We're not going to do it every day. We're not going to do it every week. We'll do it as needed with looking at developments and seeing whether there might be a difference of opinion that we could sense or measure and therefore go back to the old formula of asking people, what are you thinking about the selection? Well, today was a big day in terms of this effort to impeach the president or to seek articles of impeachment against him and to lay out the case that he should be impeached. And you know, I am amazed and continue to be amazed at the, I have to use the word weak, the weakness of the electorate. They may be thinking, but they're not doing much. And America is kind of unique in this respect. For all of the things it is credited with, it has a rather weak electorate, a passive electorate, an electorate that is slow to move, slow to anger, slow to act. We see time and again how in other countries there is immediate or almost immediate response to things that people find objectionable or wrong or unfair or undemocratic. They're in the streets. They take action that way. They voice their dismay or disapproval. Or sometimes, on the other hand, they voice their approval when something overwhelmingly good happens. They're also in the streets. They have an entirely different interpretation of this whole thing called politics and the role of the individual in creating a national attitude about politics. They take personal responsibility for shepherding what they consider to be a very precious commodity and to protect it, and that is democracy. They don't define it necessarily the way we do, but it's the same thing. What is the role of the individual to the state? Who has, is there to be understood that one has greater power than the other, or one has just as much power? But we look at the efforts all over the world. We see people who clearly are not in the business of protesting, but they're protesting. They don't get up in the morning and think about, well, where do we meet up and what are we going to do? What are we going to say? Because ordinarily their lives are well ordered. It's laid out. And they're quite used to that way of life. Their heads of households, their children taking care of their parents. They are people with young families. They have responsibilities, financial and otherwise. And so their lives are well ordered around these things. They didn't grow up with the idea that they have to now factor in constant monitoring of government and its excesses. That was not part of the curriculum of growing up. But now it is part of the curriculum for them. And not just for them. They have become more intensely involved because they also are representing the interests of people who are no longer here. They've been taken out by ruthless governments and their policies. They've been imprisoned. They've been killed. They've been sidelined. in one way or another, they've been intimidated. In any event, they are not able to participate. And so those who are have ratcheted up their expression of democracy with respect to their various governments, so that people understand that they take seriously this business of equilibrium. Government is not supposed to target people, rule over people. Government is supposed to be a partnership. It's not supposed to be tyrannical and murderous and reckless and flouting the law by which they themselves are held responsible. Two different attitudes. In the United States, there is a more laid-back and lackadaisical attitude, perhaps because times have not gotten as hard yet as to force people to see that as citizens, we have a very direct role to play. We think we have options. We see no real consequence to our lack of involvement, if that's the route we take. Leaving it to others to figure it out. We're not lovers of protests. We don't particularly like the idea, except in extraordinary circumstances, when you can't but make a decision to confront the government. And usually that comes after a long period of tolerance of excesses of government. Very hard to move toward confrontation with government. We see that as the expression of younger people who think they have nothing to lose. We don't see it as thoughtful. We don't see it as organized. We don't even see it as a right that people are expressing. We're slow to move. This election proves that. Donald Trump is a known entity, even outside of politics, and disliked even in that realm, intensely disliked. But he's elected to the highest office in the land, and as we have seen time and again, he is the nation's number one renegade. He has no respect for democracy. He will instruct as to what democracy is from his perspective, and that's all we need to know. People have been very reluctant to engage with this president, except those who are suffering. I mean, suffering to the point where they are compelled to engage. They are compelled to speak up. When their jobs are on the line, we had 800,000 federal workers. I still can't wrap my brain around that. summarily denied their paychecks. And yet this country remained very orderly. People were upset. A couple killed themselves. People felt destroyed and ruined, lost faith in the country. And these are deep, deep crimes this president has committed against the people. And life went on. There wasn't a national pausing to say, we're going to stop normal life for a minute until we deal with this and get it solved. And the way we're going to get it solved is we're going to confront this government and its representatives. We are not going to have 800,000 people and several hundred thousand families and several hundred thousand children deprived of a paycheck. But it happened. So I asked myself, how could this be? How could this be? We just saw the conclusion of labor negotiations between the United Auto Workers Union and the automobile industry. Weeks on the picket line. And then they announced there is a truce because an agreement has been reached. And then you look at the agreement and you see it involves shutting down a plant with 9,000 jobs. Is that an agreement? Could you imagine a union taking the position? We agree to lose 9,000 jobs. Something is wrong. Unless, you know, I may be completely confused about what unions are for. But I don't know how you could announce that you have reached an agreement with automobile manufacturers that involved the closing of a plant that would necessitate the loss of 9,000 jobs. So something fundamental is happening here. Fundamental, fundamentally puzzling. That things that you would consider to be bizarre are normal. The union is agreeing with the management. We must close the plant. At least one. There may be more coming down the pike. And we'll X 9,000 jobs. That's an agreement, an agreed upon solution. No fight. And similarly, with this president, we have, I don't know what to call it, It's not a democracy of sorts. It just can't be a democracy, that this is what democracy is. But people are allowing it to be this. A president who is a citizen, really, like anybody else, tells Congress, the people you want to testify against me will not be testifying. And damned if it didn't. They said today, this morning, four of them, we're not showing up. Why? Because the president's orders, they're greater than your subpoenas. Well, that's new. He tells us we're not supposed to talk to you. And so we can't talk to you. But you have duly sworn subpoenas against you, ordering you to testify. It's an order of the court. They said, yes, we know. But he's a president. And he told us not to testify. See, things are going a little bit sideways. But let me know what you are thinking as we start the 1 year trek to the conclusion of this bizarre period, this bizarre year that will conclude with the election in 2020. We take a break, come back right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about how our attitudes will evolve, or I should say, are evolving as we start the 1 year trek to the end of this madness. However it turns out, we'll see. But we try to track how people's attitudes are either changing or becoming more entrenched. What is causing you to think the things that you are thinking? And what do you see happening to this country, this nation, even to yourself, in terms of what you had envisioned this country to be and what it is actually turning out to be? What happened to this business of a participatory democracy where we're all in this together? It doesn't seem so. We're not all in this together. And yet, in a certain way, we are. We have to absorb the punches, but not the benefits of the so-called goodies of this nation. 888-874-4888. Again, 888-874-4888. What is shaping your attitudes? Are you aware of it? Are you feeling differently now than you used to feel? And what is the difference between the way you feel now and the way you used to feel? What are you likely to do as we get to the home stretch of this election? And it's not just about who wins and loses. That's very important, who wins or loses. But just as important is keeping tabs on fundamental and very often hidden changes in attitudes in the electorate that may never be voiced, but certainly will be evidenced in the course of the year. Ma'at, you're starting us off from New York. Okay, so a phone call is being handled at the same time that Ma'at is on the air. So we will wait until somebody clears the line and we can hear what Ma'at has to say. This is very important, by the way. This is a very important exercise because we don't think about ourselves as having a special and reserved role. We ordinary people, we do. This is not, we're not even part of the remotest corner of this process of election, except where they're worried is, will we show up and do what they tell us to do in their behalf? Okay, Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, I believe I am on now. Greetings to the beloved family. Thank you. A couple thoughts. First of all, at the turn of the century, I was actually living in Canada, and I wasn't here during September 11th, 01. I kind of saw it coming, and I just want to reference being in a type of atmosphere that's so much more in terms of your local community, that is much more supported and much more or less race conscious, except for their situation with the indigenous people. The indigenous people are sort of like the N-words there, but not so much black people. The second point I want to make you, Therese, is that this weekend, C-SPAN's Book TV does a program called In Depth, and Professor Imani Perry out of Princeton, I think it's a 2 or 3 hour discussion, but everyone needs to listen to the very end, because the brother at the very end, the last call of calling from Brooklyn, he speaks about being very, very tired, and no matter what we do, that these so-called white people, because that was part of the discussion in terms of that dubious identity, will never accept this, which was a very sobering thought. I also got in and asked her some other questions, but the discussion that came out was that according to, first of all, she was arrested by Princeton police for an unpaid traffic ticket.
Wait a minute. You're way off the mark. We're talking about elections and how attitudes are shaped and how we are reflecting those attitudes in this current election. And today, we observe that it is exactly a year to the outcome of the current election in play. Anything to say about that?
Yes. I think that I was trying to address the larger point of alienation and just sort of throwing up our hands in terms of expecting any real justice or going in the right direction or even honest elections that you can feel that would be honest. I guess that's my larger point.
Do you feel as a voter that your role individually and as part of a collective, let's say, of voters, is honored in this election?
Not really. Especially being in New York and how the Electoral College works in terms of a few so-called swing states, how the Voting Rights Act, we heard all the stories. For some reason, during the last election and primaries, there were whole swaths of people in Brooklyn that were just attempted to be taken off the rolls. Now, where that was coming from is a bit of a head-scratcher because, you know, we're supposedly in liberal New York, but there seems to be an agenda going down that says that we're not definitely not going in a right direction.
What is this agenda that you refer to?
Is it a right-wing, white nationalist panic because we're having a browning of the country, and the cheating, the lawlessness is off the charts, essentially.
Who's cheating?
Well, the Republicans have become famous for purging voter rolls, closing down election places in black communities, coming up with cross-check, which Greg Palast explains what a scam that is, and a Supreme Court that doesn't feel that the Voting Rights Act is relevant in these times.
So what accounts then for, I would say, on the whole, I'm speaking in general terms, a lackluster response to this? If you can see it, if you can sense it, if you could identify what is happening, do you see a strong response?
Not as strong as can be. And the Democrats have a problem with messaging and explaining where we are and what's going down.
Well, so we caught in between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Indeed,
the Republicans know exactly what they're doing.
Place.
And you could tell us what the Republicans are doing and what is happening, how this process of voting has been so corrupted, has been so violated, meaning the people's rights, of course. And on the other hand, there isn't a response commensurate with the damage being done. What do you think explains that?
Well, that's a good question. It's very clever people operating behind the scenes, billionaires operating behind the scenes. You have to take money, the influence of money, out of the process. That's, to me, one of the main things. And when there's some famous courses, and I believe Tom Hartman has done a current book around the issue, but when the Supreme Court says money is free speech, we know we're in big trouble.
Any ideas that you'd like to share that you have, particularly, you personally have, about where all of this is headed?
Well, I want to think about that before I respond, because that's a very heavy, deep question.
Okay. Granted, permission granted to think about that. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mart, for getting us started today. 888-874-4888. We're talking in general terms as we mark the official one-year time limit to the end of the current presidential election. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but we certainly can make note of some things that are quite puzzling. What is happening? How are people's attitudes being shaped? How are your attitudes being shaped? And what are those attitudes? Are they different from the ones you used to have just in the last election cycle? And what do you feel about that? Do you feel, as an empowered person, I mean, you have a vote. And will it make a difference? Do you think it has that kind of power? If you didn't vote and your neighbors didn't vote, would there be a difference in the outcome of the election? We're talking about the fundamental principles that we always hear the politicians raise about this great democracy, but somehow it doesn't feel democratic this year. It doesn't feel like we have a working democracy. We feel like we're in the process of being gobbled up into the wrongdoings of this government, that the government has gone off the rails and taking us with them. And we don't have any defenses against the intensity of the attack against people in this so-called democratic process. Is it true that we have just definitively crossed a line? Do you feel that? Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello, Willie.
And my PR and family. You know,
I
was listening to your dialogue, and I'm just laughing. You know, because what you're saying, I'm just saying, they have gone so far that it's beyond belief. It's just idiotic. It has gotten to the point of just idiotic for me now. Because everybody, it should be clear what this is all about. It has nothing to do with us, the electorate. Because, you know, what really bothers me, though, you see, the majority of the people, their minds have been taken. That's what bothers me, because we are so arrogant in our ignorance that we think what we're seeing is democracy, and we run to vote. You've been doing programs and programs after program, and it should be clear to Stevie Wonder that this is just idiotic. So, I just don't pay any attention to it, Eutrice. I pay no attention.
Okay, but what is the, is this a shift for you? Or is this your constant realization that has accompanied your attitude toward voting and the democratic process, so-called democratic process, and about elections as a whole?
I do vote, but I've never voted for somebody that's the selector for me, because I know they, you know, that's just idiotic. You're saying, oh, here's two people, pick one. No, I have better sense than that. That's and neither one represent the people. It is just one. So I vote for who I select, who I want to vote for. I don't vote for who they select for me. I didn't even vote for Obama, because the moment he denounced Reverend Wright, I knew I was rooting for him, but right away I knew this guy has no integrity, and I'm glad I never did vote for him. I did vote for Cynthia McKinney, though, because she stood up as and represent what I believed in and what I accepted as true, you know.
This year, how are you leaning, if you don't mind my asking?
What do you mean?
How are you leaning in terms of your vote? What are you going to do? What do you think is a decent representation for you that you could live with?
You trees. No, we have to create our own candidate if we really want somebody that represents us and speak to our issue. And the Congress and the White House is controlled by forces that we don't see. They're just working for, just like everybody else. They're told what to do. There are other people behind the scene that makes that they have to follow their agenda. So I don't know what we're going to do.
In your circle of friends,
yes.
What is the general attitude about this year's elections, presidential elections?
They're just as crazy brainwashed as everybody else. Because they're thinking, oh, birdie, this one and that one, not knowing, not understanding it. It's a game. They're playing with the electorate. And, you know, what I see happening now, it has become clearer and clearer to most people to see what's really happening. That has nothing to do with us. Because they do not represent none of them. Represent the people because they're on the ballot simply because they would be selected simply because they are part of the system. Simple. The whole thing got to go. We got to start all over again. From my standpoint.
Wow. Are you hopeful that it would change in a reasonable amount of time, or would it be this way for quite a while yet?
It has to. It has to change. Whether they want to or not, it will change. You know what I'm saying? It has to change because there are too many people suffering totally unnecessarily. Healthcare, money, economically, homes, you know, too many people suffering. It has to change. We may not do it, but there has to be a change.
What is it in your mind? What is it that particularly riles you about Donald Trump?
Well, his arrogance and his hatred of people and disrespect, because he has no respect for the American people and any people. He has no respect. And just his arrogance and his hatred of people. That really bothers me. But I expect that because you did a program. He doesn't know any better. It's one thing to be human. There's another thing to be humane. From my point of view, we have. A demon. We're looking at a demon. Because when you're going to do the things you do to children and people, it's very, very disturbing to me. And barbaric.
This is a general attitude in your circles? People
yes.
feel this way?
Yes.
Wow. So why is it, if people feel this strongly, how do you explain that there hasn't been a powerful response for the years that he's already been in office?
Well, as far as the black community, you mean?
No, it does, but as voters, as people, as Americans.
Well, you know, I guess our people have been beaten down for so long. We're just tired. That's what I think. We just can't do it no more because we've fought for years and years. Everything we've fought for, they've found a way to reverse it. So it's pointless for fighting within the system. We just have to do it for ourselves. That's what I think. And this is why I see so many people embrace Nation of Islam, because they're saying, well, look, this is what we got to do for ourselves first and other people after. Because we fought the battle for everybody. And once we've won the battle, everybody went in front of us and turned on us. So, you know, we're embracing what the nation is doing. as far as we are fighting for ourselves and we are doing for ourselves first, then everybody else after. You may call it racist, whatever you want to call it. That's your business. But that's the way I see it. Okay. There's too many of us that died and too many of us are still in prison.
Thanks, Willie. Thanks for your contribution today. 888-874-4888. We have time to take one more call, a short one, but there's time before we close the program today. But as you can tell, there are profound reactions. There are profound feelings. And I also get the hint that people are uncomfortable about talking about it, how they really feel, because it is so hurtful. And this is one of the things that we don't read about much. This is not part of the national discourse. How the body politic has felt defeated, beaten down. They have much higher ideals than the leadership does. That is certainly true of the Trump administration. This is a gangster and his minions running their show. They're not hiding it. It's out there in the open. They're doing what they want and they're having a great time. They have direct access to one of the largest pools of money in the world, and they're able to get it to do what they want to do. And even people like, what is his name? Doctor of HUD. We have even people like him, a religious man, Ben Carson, playing the game, holding up millions of dollars that should have long been put toward the reconstruction and repairs after the storm in Puerto Rico, and nobody can account for the money. Where is it? Carson doesn't know, but the money isn't there. And people are literally suffering because they have no way to repair their homes. All right, that brings us to the end of our program today. We'll see each other tomorrow and continue with another subject. Bye-bye.